Oopsie, sorry about that. Everyone has their name tag and yes, they're strict about name tags here. We moved from the medical center here because of all the construction going on, and they run a tight ship.
Let me introduce you.
Okay.
Welcome, everybody. I'm glad everybody can make it here. I'm sure we're going to have a very interesting time. Let me introduce Jessica Rose. Her research focuses on the neuromuscular and musculoskeletal mechanisms underlying gait abnormalities in children with cerebral palsy and other pediatric orthopedic conditions. As director of this motion and gait analysis lab, her research is focused on the energy cost of walking, muscle pathology, selective motor control, postural balance, and motor unit firing in cerebral palsy. I'd also like to introduce Adam Shepherd, who's a Stanford student, and currently working on applications of artificial walking technologies with a national research network that investigates the use of functional electric stimulation to aid in the rehabilitation of walking disorders in children with cerebral palsy. He develops electrical stimulation sequences for muscle activation, integrating data from micro electromechanical systems sensors to provide real-time motion feedback and control for FES-assisted gait. So we're going to have a slideshow first, and then we're going to have a little bit of a demo. So take it away, Jessica.
All right. Well, welcome to the Gait Lab. And does everyone have a chair that wants a chair? There might be chairs around the corner, and Dave, you are going to want a chair. Oh, no. We've got chairs for you.
Yeah, you can take my chair. I'm
going to
give
them
the light.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so you're here at the one clinical motion analysis lab at Stanford. There's actually four altogether on campus, and we do both research and clinical here, but we're part of the Children's Hospital, and primarily we see children with cerebral palsy for surgical planning and other treatment planning. And so I'm going to give you just a brief introduction to human walking and clinical gait analysis, and then we'll have time for a demo after that Adam will introduce you to. Okay? And so what I would like you to take home today is understanding that there are phases of the gait cycle, and generally what are they? Introductory understanding of the primary muscle actions during gait, and common gait disorders. We won't go into treatment today. And just to remind you, here at Stanford, we actually have a history in motion capture, and one of the very first motion analysis was conducted here as part of a wager that our founder Leland Stanford had as to whether or not all four hooves of the ground of the horse left the ground. I'm going to try to bring in the cursor. There we go. And indeed, you can see that by setting up a set of trip wires and photography there by the red barn where the horses still are, he was able to answer that question and had done a lot of great studies on human motion using the same technology. So we've had some great motion capture in the past, and four centers around campus that are also continuing that work. So the gait cycle is what we use to analyze the events during gait. And the main two phases are stance and swing phase. That's what a single leg goes through. And so when we talk about the stance phase, we're talking about a single leg. And then after stance, it swings through. And there are important events that happen, such as weight acceptance once you put your foot down. Initial contact is the first part of the gait cycle. and you have a loading response, you have stance phase, and then you go into your swing phase. And we'll just quickly go over this so that we make sure to have time for the demo. Here's a slide that shows the actions of the muscles during the gait cycle. And you can see with the red that the gluteus maximus and medius that cross the back of the hip, as well as the quadriceps. Here we go. So gluteus maximus and medius, your glutes are active at initial contact, stabilizing the hip, as well as the quadriceps in the front of the thigh and the hamstrings around the back of the thigh, all active to stabilize the leg and get it prepared to take weight. What you can also see is, does anyone know what this muscle is here in the lower tibial, the lower leg, the front of the lower leg? This is the tibialis anterior, and it lifts the foot up or lets it down slowly. And in this case, it's letting it down slowly to slow down what would be foot slap at initial contact if it didn't restrain that movement. And then the other main area where you see muscle activity during the gait cycle is mid-stance. And the muscles tend to be on either in mid-stance or other muscles are active around initial contact. And that's what I mean. Get a general understanding of muscle activity during gait. Just know that the muscles that cross the hip and the knee and stabilize the leg are on around initial contact, holds you up against gravity. And most importantly, the calf muscle is on in mid-stance, but so are all of the muscles across the back of the ankle here. And if you want to know one more piece of information about the timing of the muscles, you can look no further than the hip flexors, okay? The hip flexors and the adductors, ADD, those that bring your thigh together toward midline, are on in the transition between stance phase and swing phase. So those are just three different times in the gait cycle where you tend to see groups of muscles active with different functions. And we'll talk about the function real soon. Initial contact is the beginning of the gait cycle, and typically it's with the heel first for all of us. Typically, but in conditions such as cerebral palsy, you will have not a heel contact first, but rather what? Toe, right? Forefoot contact, initial contact. And that's fairly typical of diplegic cerebral palsy. And are people familiar with cerebral palsy? Did you talk about that previously?
No, I haven't talked about it.
Okay, so cerebral palsy is considered a non-progressive disorder. It's really arises from a non-progressive lesion in the sense that there's no there's no deteriorating lesion. However, there is actually plenty of continued progress of just from having a lesion. You, by definition, have, you know, additional changes that happen in the brain. And so the point is, it happens around the time of birth, and it affects the motor tracts and motor abilities in children, and so we're looking at spastic cerebral palsy. There's also dyskinetic cerebral palsy. So spastic cerebral palsy is more like stroke, similar to something like that. Dyskinetic would be more involving motor coordination and uncontrolled movement, and then there is ataxia, a third form of cerebral palsy that involves balance, in particularly. Okay, so moving from initial contact to mid-stance, an important function is what we call controlled tibial advancement. And that really is the function of the calf muscle here to prevent the tibia from rotating too far over the foot, because if that happens, you will collapse into a crouched gait, and that's really difficult. This is something that's, I think, just important to think about briefly. There are 3 foot and ankle rockers that happen in gait, and they serve to push, move you forward, give you momentum to your gait, and also to reduce the vertical displacement of the knee and the center of mass and smooth the gait. And the first one is a heel rocker, where the axis of rotation is around the heel. Momentarily, it's very brief. And in order to have that axis, you need to hold your foot up with the tibialis anterior so it doesn't slap down. And this little guy is working real hard, simulating the effects of the tibialis anterior. Next, towards mid-stance, the calf muscle becomes very important in restraining the tibial rotation over the foot. And so that's the gastroc and soleus muscle in the back of your lower leg, serving to restrain this motion. And notice so many of these functions are restraining actions. They're eccentric contractions that serve to stabilize the gait. And then finally, so this would be considered an ankle rocker. So here was the heel rocker, and the axis of rotation is momentarily around the heel. Here's the ankle rocker, where the tibia, this bone here, is rotating over the foot, and so it's the ankle rocker with the axis around the ankle. And the last one is the forefoot rocker. So the axis of rotation is here. You have fixed your ankle with your calf muscle, very important function, and now you can rotate over your forefoot, and it helps produce forward momentum in your gait. So those are all happening with, you know, with every step that you take. And so at the end of stance, what we look for in a gait analysis are a few things. We again look for that fixed ankle, so you can have your forefoot rocker. You look for heel rise, and you look for a trailing limb. You want to see full hip extension at this point in terminal stance. If it's not extended, if it remains flexed, you'll probably be walking in a crouched gait. So here's a photo of what happens when you have weak calf muscles or overstretched or over-lengthened calf muscle that's no longer able to help restrain the tibia over the foot. And it's a very energy-costly gait. And so, orthotics are used to try and improve this, but they're not very effective. They tend not to be strong enough and light enough to prevent this. Maybe they'll help a little bit, but not a lot. And so we're hoping one of these days new lightweight materials that are able to actually be comfortable and lightweight and resist, provide the support that's needed here will become available. Swing phase. The only thing I want you to remember about swing phase is that your peak knee flexion, which is about 60 degrees as you swing through to clear your foot, happens early in swing, about a third of the way through swing phase. And so all these things you can think about when you walk out today, okay? You also do need to dorsiflex your ankle. Does everyone know what dorsiflex means? It means bringing your foot up. So everyone stick your leg out and then bring your toes up towards you. That is ankle dorsiflexion. Point your toes now. That is ankle plantar flexion. Okay, so in swing, you have to dorsiflex, bring your toes up to clear the floor. For clinical gait analysis, we have 5 tests that we do. We look at video as an observational gait assessment. We look at kinematics and kinetics, the joint motion and the forces that cross the joint. We look at dynamic EMG, meaning that the timing of the muscle activity during the gait cycle. And we look at postural balance to sort out what who might have a unexpected outcome of surgery. So if you also have poor postural balance in addition to biomechanical problems, your response to surgery will not be predictable. And so we like to know that. And then finally, energy expenditure. We look at the energy cost of walking per distance walked. It's an efficiency measure, like miles per gallon in a car. And here we have a example. This is a child with spastic cerebral palsy with a fairly typical gait. Do you notice anything about their gait?
No arms.
Good. Very good. What else? Right, on their toes. Initial contact and all contact is with the forefoot. Okay. Anything else? Not much what?
I guess there is a lot of swing.
Right. But knee flexion is limited in swing. Very good. And how about stance? Good. That's right. Yes, there is internal rotation either coming from the hip or coming from the knee. Let's look at those knees. Are they getting all the way straight in stance? Right. No, they're not. And the rotation you can see from the cross hatches that Leslie wrote on them. And it did Leslie, I don't think I got to introduce you. This is Leslie Torburn, our physical therapist. And so you can see when we get the front view again of the cross hatch on his knees, that one side is pointed inward. You see which side that is? Yeah, the right side. The other side is straight ahead. That means that the rotation, but the feet are pointing inward in both sides, so it's a little bit worse on the right for sure. But by looking at the knees, you can see that if it's rotated inward, that rotation's coming from the hip, whereas the internal rotation progression of the foot on the other side is really coming more from the lower leg. And so you want to sort that out. And here's one more. Also has spastic diplegic cerebral palsy, but a little bit different. What do you notice?
Her heels actually are in contact.
Yeah, that's right. Right. She does get heel contact. What else? She gets a kind of extensor thrust, we call it. So how about her ankle dorsiflexion? What's going on there? Huh?
It doesn't really look like it's happening.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's not happening. It's weak. And so she has what we would call a drop foot, and she's having a hard time clearing her foot because of that, and she's stubbing her toes a little bit. And so a little different from the last child. But now how does she compensate for not being able to clear her foot? That's right. Yep. Circumducts, abducts, and circumducts the hip, because then the leg will clear. It's at an angle, and we know there's more room that way. Okay, good. So kinematics and kinetics refer to the joint motion, kinematics, and the forces that pass through the joints, the kinetics. And we measure that, as Adam's about to show you, with these 8 digital cameras, and which pick up the position of light reflective markers. And in combination with the floor reaction force, this red arrow that you will get when you walk over the force plate that's embedded in the floor here, you can get the kinetics or the moments and forces that pass through the joint. And both of those are important to look at. Here's an example of the sagittal plane kinematics. That's the side view. And here you have a single gait cycle. And the yellow is the normal excursion of the hip, which starts out flexed at initial contact, extends throughout stance, and then flexes quickly again in swing, right? Because you're bending the hip and clearing the foot. Here's the knee, sagittal plane, side view. The knee is what at initial contact normally? Yep, 0 degrees, nice and straight. You get what's called a loading response here. That was in one of the earlier slides. So if you're walking at a typical walking speed, you will always see this flexion of the knee, which I want you to think about when you walk out of here. Do you feel that it's going on? Not if you're walking real slow, but if you're walking your normal pace, that will be happening. And it's called the loading response. And you quickly then go into extension in mid and late stance, and then quickly have to flex the knee, again, achieving your peak knee flexion early in swing, and then quickly extending down. What is he doing? Here's the red is the child that we saw, the first child. So how is he at initial contact? What is his knee position? So here it is, between 20 and 40 degrees of flexion. It's about 30 degrees flexion at initial contact. So he's coming down flexed. He's staying flexed in stance phase. And what about swing? Is he getting peak knee flexion? Right, so he's not. He is limited as well, so he has both a crouch gait, what we call, and a stiff knee gait. So the total excursion of the knee is reduced. And actually, the ankle plantar flexion and dorsiflexion looks not too bad here, but he's not actually dorsiflexing quite sufficiently in swing phase. But in stance, despite being up on his toes, he's not actually plantar flexed for the first part. He's in a neutral position, and we try to sort this out because if he was way down here, one would consider lengthening the Achilles tendon, the tendon that connects the gastrocnemius, the calf muscle, and soleus to the back of the heel. But he's not plantar flexed, and you don't want to do that surgery. But just by looking at the video, you might not be able to tell this because he's up on his toes. And then we all saw the foot progression angle was internally rotated throughout the gait, most of the gait. Okay, so that's kinematics, and that's one view of the kinematics that we look at in a clinical gait analysis. And the other thing that we derive from the kinematics are this helpful model of the hamstring length and lengthening velocity. So this graph, we'll just go here. Here's a model of the hamstring. It crosses the back of the hip and the back of the knee. And here is a single gait cycle. So you're looking at the length of the hamstring normalized to height relative to the gait cycle. And here at the end of swing, remember, stance, swing, this is where the hamstring is lengthened the most. It crosses the back of the hip and the back of the knee, and right before initial contact, it's stretched over both. So here's where we look to see whether or not the length or the lengthening velocity of the hamstring is within normal range or not. And if it's not, it's part of what goes into a decision to lengthen the hamstrings and try to improve the gait. But crouched gait can be caused by tight hamstrings, but it can also be caused by tight hip flexors, and it can also be caused by a weak calf that's not holding the tibia up over the foot. So there's three causes of crouched gait, and you certainly don't want to do surgery for the wrong cause, and that's the general purpose of gait analysis, to sort those kinds of things out. Kinetics, real quickly, are, again, derived from the floor reaction force and the kinematics. If you typically see this nice plantar flexion moment in stance, and you can think about each step you push off, right? You feel that heel rise and you push off. That's what you're feeling. You're feeling this nice moment growing at the end of stance. But if you come down on your toes, you get this double bump pattern. You get an early plantar flexion moment, and your body is not over your foot quite yet. And so instead of pushing you forward, it pushes you up, and it's kind of disruptive to the gait. So that's the problem with just walking on your toes. Okie doke. We're going to move right on to muscle activity. And you saw this illustration. Here are actually the timings of the muscles. And I only want you to notice, okay, three things. Start here. Here are the muscles across the back of the ankle. When are they on? This is the gait cycle again. Stance and swing. So when are these muscles that cross the back of the ankle on? Anybody? Are they on in, uh-huh?
The first part, so stance, right?
Yep, very good. Excellent. They are on in stance, and here they are illustrated, right? But they're not on around initial contact normally. That's their role, is to, you know, again, restrain the tibia from falling over. That's how important it is. Then you have all these muscles across the hip and the knee, and they are on around initial contact. Okay, that's the main thing, is you just want to get your hip and knee stabilized around initial contact. And finally, as we discussed before, your hip flexors and your adductors are on around the transition between stance and swing. So those are just three timings that you can think about. When are your muscles on during gait, and see what you retain. This is a clinical EMG and what it looks like. And so again, you've got a single gait cycle, bless you, stance and swing. You have foot switches showing what part of the foot has made contact with the floor. Do you see any red here? Nope. Right. So there's no heel contact. And we saw that there wasn't in the first child. So this tells you what part of the foot is on when. The black line shows you the normal timing of muscle, and you can see he's got a very prolonged, really continuous rectus femoris. That's a quadricep, the quadricep that crosses not only the front of the knee, but the front of the hip. And then here's vastus lateralis, another quadricep. So if you're walking in a crouched gait, and you're going to have this quadricep on prolonged in order to keep you up. If you didn't, you would really collapse. So this is not a primary problem. This is a compensatory problem, and we want to sort that out. You don't want to do surgery on the vastus lateralis because it's on too long in stance. It's actually helpful, and all of us, if we walked in a crouched gait, would have this. This, however, is not helping. This activity is not helping the knee. It has an extensor influence, and you want to bend your knee right now. And so we do look at the timing of the rectus femoris here right before swing and during swing. The gastrocnemius also, here's the normal timing, right? Right in the middle of stance, but this is on too early, and, you know, it's premature is how we talk about it. The timing is premature. It also continues and is, the duration is too long. So those are the kinds of things that we look at. Despite that EMG, he is on his toes. We wouldn't recommend surgery on this because we know if you're on your toes, you're going to have those muscles working. And the fact that he's not in severe plantar flexion tells us we don't want to do surgery on this muscle. So even though we see a lot of extra activity, you have to look at it in the context of everything else that's going on. So this is dynamic EMG. And again, we look at it in the context also of the kinematics and what's going on. So here we're saying the ankle dorsiflexion is okay. However, we see all this activity in the gastroc, so that's the kind of interpretation that you very important to do and not just look at one aspect. Okay? This is a graph of postural balance, and we record that in this embedded floor force plate that's in the floor. And this is center of pressure between the two feet. Here's normal path of center of pressure, and here's what it looks like when you have a primary vestibular problem or balance problem that stems usually from the cerebellum, the middle part of the cerebellum, a part in your brain, which can cause poor balance like this. And we sort this out so that we're not being very aggressive with surgery if somebody has not just biomechanical problems, but also has primary postural balance problems. And finally, we look at overall energy efficiency and, you know, risk of fatigue. And we look at it similar to miles per gallon in a car. It's kind of, you could think about this, since this is heart rate, as gallons per mile, gallons of blood per mile walked, but it's actually beats per meter walked here. You could also look at it as oxygen consumed per meter walked, and that would be sort of the gold standard measure for this. What you see either way is this nice U-shaped curve where when you're at your comfortable walking speed here, comfortable to you because of your leg length and height, you will be using an optimal low level of energy per distance walked at that time. And so that's why we record this. At slower speeds, you use more energy per distance walked, and at faster speeds, you use more energy. But at this nice optimal speed that you can tell you're in, right? You know if somebody's rushing you or if you're right in where it's comfortable. That's right here where you're most efficient. And these kids with disabilities expend a lot of energy per distance walked, and sometimes surgery can help reduce that. Okay, so it's kind of like a global measure of energy cost. And so just really quickly, this is going to be the last slide. We have several types of gait. We talked about toe walking, and that's also referred to as equinus gait. If you're not only toe walking with plantar flexion, but you're also, your foot is inverted. Okay, everyone put your leg out again. Plantar flex, point your foot down, and now move it inward, right? That's inverted, and that's equina varis. That's a varus ankle and a plantar flexed ankle, and that's a different position of the foot and different surgery. Pseudo-equinus means that you're up on your toes, but your ankle is actually in neutral, and we saw that in that first child that we watched walk. It turned out, the kinematic show, his ankle was pretty neutral, but he was up on his toes, so we call that pseudo-equinus, and it is, you know, it can be very misleading just if you are only looking at the video. And let's go to crouch first. Crouch is when your knees are bent, and typically the ankles will be dorsiflexed, and we saw that black and white picture where you have ankle dorsiflexion, bent knee, very, very energy costly gait. Jump knee just means you're walking with a flexed knee, but your ankles are plantar flexed, and it's like you're jumping out of the starting blocks. So you can think of it in that term, okay? And so the last gait is the stiff knee gait, and that's when you're not getting enough knee flexion in swing. And again, that's a big risk for not clearing your foot and tripping. So I think with that, that's kind of a quick introduction to gait and gait analysis. And I think we can end here and move on to our demo.
Before we move on, I should ask if anybody has to leave early. Is
everybody okay? Okay, so we don't have a clock in here, but I think it's 10 after 5. So I think. Oh, we do. Oh, good. It's right there. Thank you. Okay, Adam. Okay.
I grabbed some shorts because you're in some shorts. Every year I'm here, and I'm always impressed by how mechanical the body is and how much all the muscles have to be choreographed in order to operate correctly. So
yeah.
It is a really a mechanical system. So
it is a mechanical system.
We should appreciate that.
That's right. Are there any questions about anything that we talked about?
So, you know, when he's walking, So there was the opening. I didn't understand the second one.
Which one?
The second one.
The second. Okay. So the child that we were watching.
No, at the very end. So
Oh, okay. Let's see. So those were the Stiffney Gate. Okay, so stiffney gait means you don't bend your knee enough in swing. And crouch gait means you bend too much in stance. The last one was the stiffney gait, where you're not bending enough in swing. Right, so I think it was, we had Aquinas gait where you're plantar flexed up on your toes. We had Aquinavarus where you're plantar flexed up on your toes and inverted. The ankle is inverted, pointing sort of inward, downward and inward. And then we had pseudo-Aquinas. So that was when somebody's walking on their toes, but the ankle is not plantar flex. It's not pointed down. It's in neutral. It's maintaining a good neutral position, but they're up on their toes, probably because their knees are flexed. And it's very hard not to be on your toes when you're walking, unless you are very weak. And then you collapse down into that very costly crouched gait. And there was one more, jumped gait. And so jumped gait just means you're walking with flexed knees, but you're plantar flexed at the ankle, like you're coming out of the starting blocks in a race.
So your knees are bent?
Yes. Yep. And your ankles are plantar flexed, pointed down. Your foot is pointed down. And so if you're standing in that position, you're up on your toes, your ankles are pointed down, and your knees are flexed, we call that a jump gait. It's better than a crouch gait. It uses less energy than a crouch gait where you're bent and your ankles are collapsed into dorsiflexion. Any other questions about... Okay. So a lot of the children that we see here are coming in before to determine whether or not surgery is helpful. And, are there any other treatments that might be helpful? And so we have pediatric orthopedic gait rounds Wednesday mornings, and that can be very interesting if it's something that's of interest to you, to hear the whole interdisciplinary team talk about the biomechanics and the other findings, the EMG, and some of the model that we now have on hamstring lengthening. We're hoping to get some other models that will be helpful. And then, you know, what's the plan for the child? What's wrong? What's contributing to it? And then what's the treatment plan? And so that's a pretty interesting discussion, you know, with a lot of different perspectives coming from our engineers, from our orthopedic surgeons, from the nurse, from the orthotist, the person that makes the AFOs, ankle-foot orthoses. And so it's a great discussion, and I think it helps the patient care improve because it comes from so many perspectives. So any questions about how it's used? Or we have some research going on now. Dave mentioned about functional electrical stimulation, and Adam is working on a device that's a multi-channel device that we hope we can use to treat crouched gait, because it's really hard to treat it with surgery. We get maybe 8 to 10 degrees of improvement in knee flexion from surgery on average, and you're flexing 35 degrees, so you're still left with a flexed gait. So this involves an 8-channel functional electrical stimulation that's triggered by foot pressure right now. We're working on getting inertial sensors to feed back to the system and tell us the gate events, and that will be great when that happens. So the new field of inertial sensing is fabulous. It's going to free us up from a lot of things, probably markers and having to do this in a lab. They now have small sensors that have three-axis accelerometer, three-axis gyro, and magnetometer, all in about a square inch. And we're using these around where my office is on Welch Road to test toddler reaching in relation to their brain development at birth. And, of course, having just a little wristwatch is a lot easier on a toddler than having all the markers. And so there's definitely situations where you want to monitor movement, but you can't, you know, be successful in a lab environment like this. And there's a lot of examples of that. So inertial sensing, I think the MEMS, the microelectromechanical systems, have great potential, and I would encourage you to check in to that, because the technology is getting better and better, and the size of the sensors is smaller and smaller, and I'm really optimistic. So we hope that that will information can control back to the functional electrical stimulation and tell us where in the gait cycle the person is real time, and then we know what muscles we want to stimulate. And we are starting based on models that was done by Kat Steele, who's a biomechanical engineering graduate student, and she looked at muscle potentials during gait, what muscles contribute to upward acceleration the most, and at what time during gait. So in other words, what's most important to accomplishing hip and knee extension? Turns out, kind of no surprise, that the gluteus maximus, the gluteus medius, and the quadriceps are really essential at the first part of stance phase. Perhaps less intuitive is the fact that the soleus muscle at the end of stance can really help you straighten your knee out. And we had talked about how that muscle restrains the tibial, kind of keeps it from collapsing over the foot, the lower leg, and keeps you out of crouch. Well, similarly, the soleus is part of that muscle. But the soleus only crosses the back of the ankle, does not cross the back of the knee, like the gastrocnemius, also your calf muscle does. So if you stimulate the soleus, but not, just let me know when you're ready, not the gastroc, you get a nice upward acceleration from that. And so you have to be low, so you miss the gastroc, but it's very interesting and great that the models are there to help us identify that. Okay.
All right, without further ado, let those all suited up. So put 18 markers. Our marker set uses 18 markers.
So we should move the chairs out of the way.
Yeah, you need a runway. So
please. And I'll move out of the way. Oh. Yikes. Yep. Sorry about that.
So Leko's got 18 markers on right now.
Is there a spare marker that I can give them a call so she can...
Sure. It's actually, there's four more over there on the desk. To the left more. Left.
So the markers are like cool. Small kind of styrofoam balls about a half inch in diameter that are covered by reflective tape. And then they're stuck on the body with sticky...
I think Lexia's in the way.
Yeah, this definitely isn't going to be ideal because I'm sure these chairs are reflecting. There's all types of stuff reflecting. So the cameras are infrared cameras, so they're just reflecting back into themselves to find these position of these markers. There he is.
So okay. There. Okay, we're good.
Yeah. That's so there's Leko.
Yes.
Oh man, let's start recording you.
Okay, so now walk over the force plates. Yep, there's your floor reaction force. Yep.
Wow. The propulsion is proportional to that diameter, isn't it?
Yes.
I get it. zero this one.
So Adam is zeroing out the...
So yeah, the first thing I need to do is like auto zero kind of tear or set back the force plates so they're at neutral. And then what we do is we have people walk back and forth.
So why don't you walk back and forth, back and forth? Yeah, it's hard to walk with bent knees.
So what you're seeing on the bottom is scrolling by are the forces and the force plates, and you can see the arrow going through the force. I'm showing the Z force right now. So as he's leading over, you see it going through the rockers of the ankle from behind the leg to in front of the leg as he progresses. And then after we get some captures of these, I will load them in here in process. And
so you see right there where the arrow is behind his knee right there? That's why there's so much demand on the quads. That arrow should be, you know, right in line with the whole leg for all of the pressure to be where it should be.
So let's load this first one. So there's 18 markers that go on in these sets for walking. And the 18 markers are the left shoulder or acromion, the right shoulder or the right acromion, the scapula, and then the left acis, the right acis, and the sacrum. And so these create sort of the top plane and the bottom plane.
Can you explain acis?
The acis is the
anterior
superior iliac spine. I need help with this a lot.
So it's part of your pelvis here. And you can see where the markers are, and you can feel it on yourself.
Yeah, so if you just put your hands sort of on your pelvis and feel for the ridge, there's sort of these hooks you'll feel going over. That is the crest of your acis, is what I like to call.
Your iliac.
And so two of the markers there, one on the sacrum, which is the two dots basically in the back of your back, sort of the lower part of the spine. The shoulders, the back, and then two markers, one on each knee, and then between the knee and the ankle and the knee and the hip, we've got these longer ones. They're technical markers. So those are creating a straight line between the, the greater trochanter. You're looking between the greater trochanter, the center of the knee joint approximation, and the center of the ankle joint approximation. And you're creating a straight line to sort of get a wireframe the best you can. And then one goes between the first and fifth metatarsal on top of the foot, and one on the heel. And those are the marker sets. And then after we get this, I will go through and identify the markers, although this is good, this is pretty clean. And then come in here, find a section of it that's clean, so as he sort of gets out of the capture window, there's a certain volume of capture you can get within the ring of the cameras that's defined in the software. Then I'll look at that and do a lot of post-processing, or a lot of my audio work and post-processing skills come in handy. And then I'll get a nice clean track like this. And then from there, I can process and create the graphs that you saw in the presentation. I guess we could go through doing that last one. So can you go into the middle of the room for me, Leko? All right. Excuse me. Let me get through here real quick. So then in addition to getting the motion capture while we're moving, I grab four more markers. I'm going to put them on the medial side of the knees as well as the medial side of the ankles, so that you can get an approximation of the joint centers for both the ankle and the knee. So I'll slap on four more of these.
These pull hair off and
pull off. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I made sure not to tell you that before. So I will use the crest of the knee to find about the midline and create an axis there, and then go ahead back and can get in that square of the force plate. Perfect. And then face me and sort of spread your legs a little bit. Keep your arms there and just stay as still as you can, like a statue, while we take pictures of you. Okay, cool. Thanks. And then from there, let me load this project. Cool. Oh, why can't I load project? That's weird.
Is this testing covered by insurance?
Yes, it is.
Good to know.
Except for United Healthcare. Okay. We are not too happy about at the moment. But the other ones are good.
All right. It's not letting me load this project.
How much does it cost?
So it costs about $6,000 for a full test, but that's the system of healthcare that we have has evolved such that charges tend to be very expensive, as you know, and then hospitals negotiate about half that price. So that's kind of, you can take that for what it's worth.
That's what we do, that's what we get paid, more what it costs.
That's right.
That is something I am also trying to figure out in my spare time.
We need a single payer. That wouldn't happen in that case. But so Children's Hospital has a policy where they actually help people pay for things. So that's a good thing that they do. And it's really important that this gets done before surgery so that they're well planned, and typically we will reduce the amount of surgery that's recommended and
so
make it more strategic.
Is this all this testing, is it standard practice throughout the country?
It is, actually, and now for the last 3 or 4 years, U.S. News and World Report in their evaluations of children's hospitals ask how many patients are seen in the GATE lab for pediatric orthopedics. So it is standard of care, and for certain diagnoses, and I think has definitely helped to move the treatment.
Oh, I'm wearing it.
Oh, okay, good.
So what I was doing is loading up a different project, because we have different project files depending on if you're doing the static session like this or you're doing the walking session. So this is the static session marker set, which is 22 markers, as I was saying, in the knee medial markers and the ankle medial markers, which you can see here, to approximate the joint centers. And so what I'll do is I'll get a static set, which me and a bioengineer were calibrating yesterday because we heard about some new functional calibration static trials, where instead of just standing still and getting the wireframe and taking the ACES markers, the thigh markers, and sort of approximating where the hip center joints are, we were doing things like, there's these where you move your legs in functional movements, sort of flex your hip forward 35, back 35, adduct to the side, and that will approximate sort of the range that's moving in here, and we found that there was no difference, maybe like a couple degrees between this static trial and these star patterns, they call them. So then using that, I'll open up the software to create really quick graphs and tell Leko how bad he walks. It's going to be, you're going to have to hear it here. It's going to be. All right, Jaffe's class, current folder. All right. Yeah. Leko. How old are you, Leko? Cool. All right. Can you motion capture that? That's cool. Height? 5'9", so centimeters, that's like 170. I got a calculator somewhere. Cool. I would get you through the whole ringer and put you on the scale over there. We could do height and weight, like you're
a real
patient.
530, so I think we're
gonna have to. So was that 5'9"? So 175. And then weight. 145 times 24. 66 points. Good call, dude. 66 kilos. And then foot length. There's actually a. Can you grab the little. There's a little tool over there. It's like. Looks like a metal ruler. Or like a ruler with a metal top on it. To the right of the little machines there. You're right there. Yeah. So the other thing we do is measure the feet. Actually, they open up. They're like davits. Yeah. You can pull it off if you need it. What is it in centimeters? Cool. Find out if your feet are symmetrical. Probably are. So what we'll do is we'll put in these certain anthropometrics. We also take ankle diameter and knee diameter if we're not going to do that static trial. But we do have a static trial, so we don't have to put these numbers in. You can kind of ignore it. So I'll write his file, and these are the sets of markers, and we're using the Helen Hayes marker set with a static trial. So go ahead and say that. Say, here's your static, and then here's your walking trial. Oh, it has gaps in the data. Not good. Seems constant. So then I'll come into the editor here and make sure that these get everything right, which it looks like they absolutely haven't. So you got like a right foot strike here. That looks cool. And then it says there's a left foot strike at some point. No way, no way. I don't think so. And then, oh wait, there's another one there. Okay. And then I'm going to look for his toe off. So I'm looking for the toe off here is sort of, you're looking for the first sort of forward momentum of the shank. So at what point are you actually getting there, like forward movement? So I'm going to go with the first one at 26. So take that out. And then your next strike, 81. Cool. So here's another. It's an 80 something. I can like barely read that. Cool. Oh, whoops.
So this gives you an idea of some of the processing. The results are going to be what you've already seen, actually, in the kinematographs. So the graphs that we saw of the hip, the knee, the ankle, and the foot progression angle is what you will end up seeing after processing this. It does take quite a while. Probably not.
Whoa. Oh, that's when you started to turn around. That's no wonder it messed up. Oh, that makes perfect sense. So I should go back and finish that, but let's see if we can just get something real quick. So this is very rough, quick, sort of the ankle extension graphs you're getting, which, because of the turn at the end, they're totally wrong. So I would have to redo that.
Yeah, I think
you
better
stack them up.
That would be great. Yeah.
I want to thank Jessica and Adam because this is actually the second tour they've had today, so they've been through a lot of this. And I also want to thank the drivers for carpooling us and making it possible for everybody to be here.
Yes, so thank you for coming. Any questions about anything?
If you haven't signed in, I have the pink sheet over here. Please. Thank you so much.
That's better. Yeah, have a good one.